How do you think this country can move forward? I'm speaking to you from Cleveland, where Tamir Rice was killed by police officers just 2 years ago. The officers in that case of the 12-year-old boy who had a toy gun in a park were not charged.
And, you know, I think that this country will move forward only if we as individuals, right, we see that it won't come inside of a courtroom. Justice won't be served there. But justice will only become a reality when we as individuals stop making excuses for problems that are hundreds of years old, right? We see with Sheriff Clark's comments as he's being used as a puppet to further hate of black bodies and to perpetuate this myth that people are, Black Lives Matter is out to kill police officers. We have to admit that there's a problem. Philando Castile was a law-abiding citizen who had a permit to carry a weapon, and he was killed by law enforcement because he was a black male. So I think that
Kwame
we have
Rose
to have conversations
as individuals. Kwame Rose and former federal prosecutor Cheryl Wood, I want to thank you for being with us. That does it for our broadcast. Special thanks to the Denver Open Media crew, to Dennis Moynihan, Sam Alcock, Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman from Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks for joining us.
Pop quiz. Your teen is going to a party with lollipops, a pacifier, and toy angel wings. You think she's going to A, play charades, B, relive her childhood, C, take a drug called ecstasy. Innocent-looking candy and toys are associated with the use of ecstasy, a drug that can cause brain damage, heart failure, and even death.
To learn more, go to drugfreeamerica.org.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free New York and America.
You think you're invincible. I started out taking 1 to 2. I ended up taking 7 to 10. Nothing goes the way that people expect it to go. You don't remember things you're doing. Your body hurts. You're just worn down.
With ecstasy, it was like one day I was healthy and had an immune system, and the next day I didn't.
I would wake up sometimes, like, shaking. It's physically painful. Once I hit my absolute bottom emotionally and mentally, I just wanted to die.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free New York and America.
On the real, check it out. If Pop were a person, you wouldn't be down with him at all. Yeah, he might be fun at first, but then he'd be the one to make you quit sports. Next thing, he's picking fights with your parents, because he's always getting you into trouble. And then before you even know it, he's messing up your grades and everything else, just to get high. Look, if Pop were a person, you wouldn't want to hang out with him. And that's for real, yo.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free New York and America.
Yes, that is the message from them. It's exactly 6 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, the 19th of July, 2016. You know, you don't take 7 doses of something. I don't understand some of these PSAs. And anyway, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. That's 90.1 on the frequency modulation band. You can check us out at WUSB.FM. There's playlists, streaming information, and a whole heap of other stuff there. But right now, it's time for Off the Wall. Yes, welcome to Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, and over here to my right is Emmanuel, the host.
Hey, what's up? I just got to say, you know, I object in the strongest terms to the PSAs you choose, because they just are so propaganda-y. Partnership for drug-free, you know, yeah, the idea is good. The idea is fine. Keep our kids pure and all that. But a lot of it is very ignorant. A lot of it is very misguided.
Yeah, I was actually going to do an analysis, and this is a great time for us to introduce something we're going to be doing, which is a review of every single PSA at the radio station. We're going to critique them, and mine this week,
Can't you just play one about furniture polishing or something nice and uncontroversial?
No, they're drug-themed. It pained me to go through and find exactly what ones I wanted to use, and they had a lot of terrible edits in the ecstasy ones. The first one was, of course, signs that your young person is going to go to a rave. Now, going to a rave is not necessarily something that's a bad thing. There's plenty of non-rave venues where young people will be using drugs or might have access to things like ecstasy. So that right there doesn't necessarily mean they could just be a big music fan. They like electronic music, so they're going to go to a rave. That does not mean they're going to be on drugs. And if they bring candy and they bring these kinds of things, it might be a sign that they're a part of that community. Still doesn't really mean they're on drugs. But of course, the next PSA was this young person talking about how nothing goes the way you plan. Now, that is the most vague, asinine thing I've ever heard.
Well, it's true, because I wasn't planning on this.
Right. Well, okay, but look at life. Look at anybody's life. Yeah, nothing goes the way you plan. And it's going to be even more true if you take 7 hits of ecstasy like a moron.
Well, yeah. I guess anyway, maybe we should just have one PSA that says, don't be a moron. How about that?
That would cover them all, but I think variety is what they're going for.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, there are a couple other things, statements and things that she was saying that anecdotally, yeah, okay, yeah, it hurts. Well, you know, it is going to hurt the next day. You are going to have a compromised immune system the next day because you might have been out and not been aware of your body temperature or your hydration levels or other things. So, yeah, of course, it's a risk, but it isn't... I don't think quite as sensational. It probably was a big event for her life. I don't want to diminish that at all, but it's not exactly going to be everybody's reaction. And to take that story and associate it with an entire music culture or even a drug. I mean, there's therapeutic purposes for ecstasy, and it has been used by psychologists and psychiatrists, and there has been some research on that, the efficacy of it.
But I mean, it wasn't just ecstasy. You played an anti-pot one,
okay,
as well.
So
pot's legal in so many places now.
And that was my final comment. The third one is about, yes, pot. And I will say, the station may not condone this, they may not themselves say it, but I say all that applies if you're under 18.
Did they say that? In the public service announcement, they did not say that.
I don't think it said anything specifically to 18-year-olds. I can call it up again and play it.
Let's critique it as it's playing.
Shall we?
That's fairer, I think. Yeah, because these are important. You know, minds are impressionable in many ways, including listening to the radio.
Right.
So if something is spreading misinformation or is being misleading, I think, you know, it's our obligation as broadcasters to call them.
No, you're right, and because everything is so easy here at the station, I can just
you have to scroll through these,
call it up,
one line descriptions, and you don't know what it was filed under. How'd you find it the first time?
I kind of know what it is, uh-huh. But it doesn't start with P, or I'll tell you that, because I went to P. I didn't go to P, but
propaganda,
I went to the letter
is,
P, for pot. But I don't
know.
No,
it said pot at the end.
Yeah. Drugs, D. That's what it is.
Oh, it's drugs. Okay.
Yeah, drugs. Dope. Is it dope?
Who calls it dope anymore?
Dr. Dominican.
You know, we don't have to do this. Obviously, it's too confusing for us.
Killing me. This is just...
There's just so much else to talk about.
Well, this totally derailed, actually, what was a pretty good critique of all the IDs. The point is, in the third one, that, you know, really that is that is applicable if you are in a formative sort of growing age. I think adults are fine.
It's yet another indication as to how pot can be damaging, because we wouldn't be so derailed and confused right now if this PSA hadn't been here. And this PSA wouldn't be here were it not for pot.
That's right.
You've scrolled through this like 15 times now. It's not there anymore. It's gone.
When I find it, I'm just going to play it.
I think you're looking at IDs, not public service announcements.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I'm in the wrong folder.
Wow.
See, now that's again. Oh, there it is. There it is. Okay, ready?
Okay, here we
on
go.
On the real. Check it out. If Pot were a person, you wouldn't be down hang with, out him with him at all.
Nah.
Yeah, he might be fun at first, but then he'd be the one to make you quit sports. Next thing, he's picking fights with your parents, because he's always getting you into trouble.
Pot.
And then before you even know it, he's messing up your grades and everything else, just to get high. Look, if Pot were a person, you wouldn't want to hang out with him. And that's for real, yo.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free New York and America.
You know, I got to say, if a baloney hero were a person, I wouldn't want to hang out with him either.
True.
I'm just saying. You know, it doesn't, it's just dumb. It's just dumb.
Again, you're not.
And that's my opinion. And my opinion is not necessarily that of anyone else. And maybe not even myself at other times of the day, but.
Well, and what it is this, it's not teaching anybody about responsible use. It's not, it's distorting the message. And it's saying, stay away from this entire subject instead of talking about, how people react differently to different substances, how there are specific contexts, how school isn't necessarily the best place to, although, you know, some people have different ways of learning and it helps them in school.
If school were a person, I sure would want to hang out with it.
And I think a lot of students would agree with you on that. But absolutely, I mean, to just cascade it and personify it, and then personify it as all the bad things that happened to maybe one fictitious person, and it's really just this compounding of all these horror stories, you're not really being honest with young people about what they're going to be exposed to. And, you know, this is a college campus. I would say there's probably some cannabis use here. And in general, in the world, people are going to have to confront those things. They're going to have to know about them. They're going to have to know, how to navigate that. So by saying that you don't have a say in your grades, and that if you start hanging out with people that are like this, all of these things are going to necessarily be something that's associated with, it probably isn't going to serve you. It's not going to equip you with the kind of situations that you probably encounter in the real world.
But I do agree, aimed at younger people, it applies, sure, because brains are still developing and things like that, and there's all kinds of other possible harmful effects. But that wasn't said. It was only mildly implied, but it was not said. Yeah, your parents and going out for sports and grades, but other people have parents, other people go out for sports, other people have grades. We're not in high school, so it needs to be a little bit more specific.
Yeah, it should. I mean, that the sentiment's there, but it confuses it, because you're making it out to be a lot scarier than it has to be. I mean, yeah, it's not going to help if you're completely consumed by it, but it isn't also, you know, the worst thing in the world if you're just so happen to be a student. And I could tell some interesting stories, but that's beyond the scope of the show.
Do me a favor.
Yeah.
Next week, play the PSA about not driving your car onto the train tracks when the train's coming, you know, because I don't think we'll get into a, you know, debate or have any problems with that. Although there might be some people who do debate that.
No, that'll be a little bit more clear cut. We'll have a lot less to say, but definitely the first round of reviews of our wonderful PSAs here has gone quite well. Glad we got to comment on that.
But have a radio show to do.
We do.
And we only have an hour to do it. Actually, we have less than an hour to do it. And we are incredibly busy. I was just driving a big truck. We're getting the conference ready for this weekend, the Hope Conference in New York City. And that involves driving big trucks and moving a lot of things and organizing and phone calls. And occasional,
a lot of logistics.
Occasional emails and various other. Yeah. We have a crisis right now that you don't know about that I'm not going to share with you until after the show. Because these crises always happen right when I'm going on the air, and there's nothing I can do about them then. Did you hear about this? The crane collapse? Did you see where the crane collapsed?
No, I have not seen.
You're going to love this
where
one.
Where is the crane?
Well, in New York City, cranes have a tendency of collapsing. It's almost like a tradition in the city. This was a little bit north of the city. The crane collapsed right on top of the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Oh, is this the extension they're building?
Well, it came from the extension. It's not an extension. It's a replacement.
A replacement bridge, yeah.
They're building a replacement bridge because the first bridge, which was built in 1955, apparently is falling apart. I don't know why a bridge built in 1955 has to be rebuilt. It seems like that should last for at least 100 years, if not more. But they had a crane that was up on the new Tappan Zee Bridge, and that just toppled right over every single lane. We've been over the Tappan Zee Bridge. It's a wide bridge. I think it's got four lanes in each direction.
Uh-huh.
It went across every single lane and closed the entire thing. Nobody was killed, if you can believe that. But there's a big crane lying across the entire bridge there.
Oh, would you look at that? It looks like a little barrier, a little...
It is a barrier. It's a big barrier.
It's like a little fence, but it's really a bunch of trestle.
Look at that. It sure is.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
A couple other quick news items here. You might have heard about this. Montauk, out in Montauk, they've removed these gigantic Welcome to New York signs that were put up overnight. June 30th, in the middle of the night, apparently, these signs were put up. And we've seen them in Port Jefferson. Big Welcome to New York signs, massive, and apparently didn't really fit in with the image that Montauk wanted to give out, which was not to welcome people to
New York. So they overruled the state.
They basically had, they're going to put up smaller ones. Here's what I don't get. Who comes to Montauk that's coming from out of state? It doesn't, unless you're arriving by boat from Europe, I don't see how Montauk would be the first place you see in New York State. Orient Point, Port Jefferson because of the ferry, sure. Montauk? I don't understand. Why are the signs there?
What about private airports?
Well, there's private airports everywhere, not just in Montauk.
Okay.
And I don't even know if they're in Montauk, but it's kind of weird. I don't know why they...
There could be international flights or something.
I suppose. And then there's this whole controversy out west about the third track for the Long Island Railroad. Apparently...
not third rail, right? This is a track.
No, we already have the third rail. We have the third rail. People in Floral Park, which is one of those neighborhoods all the way to the west, they're upset. You know why? Because they built a town or a village swimming pool just adjacent to the train tracks.
Okay.
I don't know why they did that, but they did. They know the train is there. They know the train is going by. And now they're worried that the train is going to be even closer. I mean, a train isn't going to go into the swimming pool. It's the width of a single train car. Okay, that's what we're talking about here. I don't know why people get so bent out of shape over these things. So, yeah, they're going to widen the property I assume they already own to do this. And,
or get an easement on the right of way.
Yeah, and if they're using eminent domain and taking over other people's property, then they will compensate and supposedly rebuild or whatever. But people are just getting really upset at oh my God, it's going to be construction and noise and more trains. More trains is what the objective is. It gets the commuting a little bit more rational.
I think more trains equals less traffic.
Yeah, absolutely, and. It's just, there's a huge article about all this.
About the disdain, perhaps, that as well.
But, I hope they do it. I hope they finally get this done and that there are more trains running. You know, I was always against electrification out here to Port Jefferson because, I don't know, I kind of like the diesel train that they have. You have to switch at Huntington. Now I'm sort of on the fence about it. It would be nice to have a fast train that gets you into Manhattan from here in, 40 minutes, which is definitely possible, instead of the 2 hours. It takes longer to go by train than it does to drive, which is insane.
Yeah, I mean, these kinds of track improvements allow many more trips.
Mm-hmm.
Think not trains specifically, but trips on a day. I mean, for instance, it exponentially increases what they can do as far as having passing and siding and adequate safety and that stuff as well.
Well, and the other thing is that it brings more people out. But the thing is, I don't like people, so then I'm sort of opposed to it for that reason, because I like to move fast. I like things to be convenient, but I don't want overpopulation or more people going back and forth or things like that. So I'm kind of torn on that. As far as the electrification, though, I would prefer if it was overhead. I realize they probably can't redo it now. I don't know why they do third rail out here. Metro North does overhead for the most part. Amtrak does overhead. And you can't step on an overhead wire. At least it's really hard to do that. But you can step on a third rail, and no doubt people will be doing that as they figure out what that's all about. So that's the update from the island. Actually, you know what? There is another update. Okay, let me get to this now, just so that we can get to some other things that are happening in the nation afterwards. Did you know there was a Black Lives Matter protest in East Hampton?
Sorry,
am I taking away from you?
No, I'm just thinking kids like trains. I mean, I don't see the problem having a water park next to the tracks. But
okay, anyway. When I put the article down,
yes,
it means the story is finished. Doesn't mean pick it up and read it, because then we have to talk about
Wait,
it
Wait, you handed it to me.
No, I put it over there. It's within reach of you, granted, but no, don't touch that.
This is the complete pile. Well, okay. No, so wait, there was a protest
Black
or a
Lives
march?
Matter.
A march?
It was a Black Lives Matter march, yeah, 100 okay. people, 100 people in East Hampton.
Okay.
Where they don't see many black people. They really don't.
I'm not going to say that's okay, but...
It's not okay.
That's a fact.
Why would that be okay? But the reason I'm bringing this up is not so much because of the story, but the story is good. It's a good story. It really is a good story. More than 100 people marched Sunday in East Hampton Village and Bridgehampton in support of the Black Lives Matter movement, as a local NAACP president called for increased cooperation between protesters and police. That's a really positive theme, I think. And as I said, the story is not the issue here. It's the reaction to the story. But let me read a little bit more about what actually happened here. The organizers said they wanted to keep the movement alive after last Sunday's march in that town to protest the police killings of black men, including the shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota. We'll go wherever people are asking us to come out. They had a pretty good turnout. They met with East Hampton Village Police Department Chief Jerry Larson. There's been local cooperation, he said. This should be the way it works. Total respect for each other. Larson stood with demonstrators while three members of the East Hampton Village Police Department monitored from nearby Herrick Park. Police closed off the right lane on Newton Lane and Main Street for the march. Officers on foot in his squad cars guided the marchers en route to Village Hall. East Long Island NAACP President Lucius Ware stressed that cooperation between demonstrators and local police departments is so critical and so meaningful to augmenting the message that both black and blue lives matter. I'm looking forward to seeing it continue. Now, despite the show of unity Sunday, some people stopped, stared, and hurled insults at demonstrators. Others snapped pictures, recorded videos, and clapped to the beat of the drum that was playing throughout the whole thing. But that's, you know, it was a positive thing, a very positive event, something that I think most people walked away from feeling good about. Now, the story appeared in our local paper, known as Newsday. And if you listen to this program, you know that I have an issue with Newsday's comment boards, in that they attract the scum of the earth for some reason, as so many message boards seem to do. And I don't know why. I don't know why, because they stopped just allowing completely anonymous posts. You have to tie it into your Facebook account now, or you have to make an account with Newsday, which you can certainly make anonymous, but it's less anonymous as before, when everybody was just the same basic anonymous idiot. But here are some remarks that I thought were worth sharing, because people need to realize this is an issue. This is something that is not going away and that needs to be dealt with one way or another. Now, Kaiser Soze obviously is somebody that is not real. He's chief executive officer at Self Employed, which is obviously not a real company either. Basically, starts off the discussion by saying BLM, Black Lives Matter, equals Klan with a tan. Yeah. Stephen DeSimone of Half Hollow Hills Central School District says BLM equals terrorist group. Tony Bellini chimes in, a good BM is more important than you. Oh, he's just insulting somebody else for some other reason. It's got nothing to do with this comment. I'm sorry. He just, I saw BM and for some reason thought it was saying BLM.
I think that's brown matter.
Yeah. Okay. More would have attended, says Chris DePetta of West Hampton Beach, but they were in Baton Rouge today doing the things BLM does best, making a reference to the murder of three police officers, which, of course, happened... completely unrelated to this scheduled protest, happened, I think, later than the protest was happening in the first place. But these people want to tie it to them and make it seem as if they're responsible somehow. It's incredible. We saw that at the convention last night, which is simply unreal. But let me continue with some of these statements. Mm-hmm. Peter Ekstrom from North Massapequa says, yeah, like killing police officers, robbing, looting, and burning their towns to the ground. That's what black people do. Lynn Marie says, yeah, murdering innocent cops. They all are basically saying this. There is not one person saying anything different, not one person. It used to be that it was at least some kind of back and forth. It was maybe half and half to start with. Then it was two-thirds, one-third. Now it's 100% racist idiots. Lori Beth says there is a White Lives Matter protest going on today in Dallas. Thank you, Lori Beth, for that that breaking news item. She's very happy about that. Tom Hines says, why do they need to form a group, they being the black people? How about start by becoming productive members of society and exact change by becoming involved in legitimate groups that can fight their cause civilly? Their cause, because it's not our cause, it's their cause. We don't care that black people are being killed without any reason by cops, and cops are getting away with it left and right. We saw even another example of that in Baltimore. Stay in school and get educated. Become police officers. Work hard and rise through the ranks. Get your leaders elected to local, state, and federal governments. Maybe what I'm saying is pure pie in the sky, but I know killing police officers will get them nowhere fast. Again, there's this belief that these are the same people killing police officers. If you listen to Democracy Now! Before us, I think Amy basically summarized it really well by saying a former Marine went out and killed these cops. You know, it wasn't a black guy went out and killed some white people. First of all, one of the cops was black. So it had nothing to do with race. It had to do with militarization, hatred, fear, and easy access to weapons.
To military-grade assault rifles.
Yeah. And you have to ask yourself, you know, at what point does it reach that stage where people are taking up the arms that they believe they have the right to have and taking action into their own hands? That's what I keep hearing the Second Amendment being interpreted as. Well, when the government gets corrupt and fascist, you have to defend yourself. You have to take back your country. Well, what do we say if these people who believe that cops are assassinating them, shooting them down for no reason at all, and there's certainly evidence to support that happening a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. Well, okay, now you have access to your guns because the Second Amendment gives you that access. You believe the government is killing you. What do you do about it? Well, if you follow the redneck ideology, you take out some cops. This is what that attitude has led to. So take a good look at how America is developing. This is the result. You know, I can't believe this isn't being focused on more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's conflating mental health and easy access and one person who has an agenda and a history who, as we've said so many times, snaps, who loses it.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, there's plenty of stuff in the news to help you get there. If you have mental health issues, okay, I think even the most sane and level-headed people are looking at some of the action and looking at some of the ills of society and shaking their head. I think people have genuine dissatisfaction with what's going on. So for someone who's close to that to go off the handle and then to not bring it back around to that access, to the weapons themselves, and look at that as a parallel,
mm-hmm.
not a cause, but a parallel, is insane. I mean, you really, it is worth the introspection, I think, that is due.
Let me read a couple more comments from the Newsday bulletin board here, and then we'll move on. Nick Olivia says, says, the black folk I get, but the white folk, I dream of them getting raped, robbed, assaulted, and bludgeoned by the very black criminals they protest for. Please let that happen. Thanks, Nick, for that that little wish list of yours. I love that they're using their real names now. Ken Thalheimer of Morrill High School, Frank H. Morrill High School. Not moral as in what you should have, but M-O-R-R-E-L-L. How about the black in New York City, because that's how you refer to people, the black in New York City snuck up and beat the living hell out of a 75-year-old man as his black pearl girlfriend kept watch. I don't even know what that means. 75 years old and he wasn't black. Because if he was black, I guess we wouldn't be talking about it. What about his life? Take your one-way street and stick it. Explain this one, BLM, because you're responsible for every crime that's ever committed.
Yeah, what the heck is that? It's like, I'm sorry, that sounds like somebody got robbed.
Yeah.
Okay, what does that have to do
with
the movement?
Who defends that? Who defends that? It's so ludicrous. Continuing, I see today three cops are killed in Baton Rouge, and here you are protesting. Protesting what? Blacks killed them. Somebody done me wrong again. Is that it? And you know, this is all the protest was took place before before the news of that came out. You didn't even know who the perpetrator was.
Did you say protest?
No, I don't think,
I think
so.
You just
did
made up a word. Protest. Okay. Okay, yes.
I didn't mean to say that if I did.
Protest.
Okay, and Liliardo Rios says, perhaps they should get off their stoops and look for a job, and they won't have time for this BS. All lives matter, period. Why should black lives matter more than you and I? God, you know, no one knows how to write anymore. No one knows how to put together a sentence. How about that?
Stoop, porch, that's like the whole lazy African-American.
Because you're seeing the generalizations people are making.
I know where that comes from, yeah.
It's insane.
Okay.
And this is the attitude. You have this as the background noise all the time that's there in society. You see how these other issues bubble up to the surface frequently. I'm surprised they don't bubble up more, but with this kind of hatred as a constant, wow. Yeah. This,
no, these people, they're sitting next to you at the doctor's office in the waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are the nice, distracted lady that cuts you off in an SUV. They are all of these people. They are our neighbors. They are us.
Exactly.
We need to look at that.
Exactly. They are us. They are. And, you know, I say that I've never met a Trump supporter. I don't know. None of my friends are Trump supporters, or even acquaintances are Trump supporters that I know of. But they are around, and they are our neighbors. They are us to some degree. I just don't know exactly where, but they are. And we have to look at that and confront it. Liliardo is still speaking, so let's let her finish.
Mm-hmm.
Why should black lives matter more than you and I? This BS has got to end. Amazing how all the basketball stars are talking about this and that, and in the meantime, they make millions off whites that go to see their games. Stop complaining and start educating your own families, and start working, and don't sell drugs and carry guns to kill innocent people. Stop being a gangsta. Couldn't even spell gangsta right. A word that's gangster. Already misspelled.
Gangsta. So gangsta.
Gangsta.
Gangsta. Wait.
Tony Bellini has a response. He says, let them march all they want. Just stay out of the roadway unless you want to get run over.
Okay, that's a death threat.
Yeah, there's so many of those. There's so many death threats and veiled ominous things they're saying.
Yeah, but wait, no, the police closed off the road, so you should be allowed to be in the road technically because it's a march.
If you happen to be watching the news, that doesn't always apply. And I'm making reference to the tragic events in Nice where some lunatic in a truck drove down a road that was closed off because he hated people or something. It's interesting in that case how everyone was saying, oh, this is Islamic terrorism, and now it turns out the guy was just out of his mind. And yeah, his name was Mohammed, but I wonder how many people named Mohammed got run over. You know, he didn't ask Muslim, not Muslim, before running them over. There are crazy Muslim people who aren't religious, believe it or not, and he might have been one of them.
And they are reacting, and it is this sort of side effect. It's a symptom of the greater sociological ill, like the greater lack of discussion and trauma. I mean, that is what I was looking up. Half staff, all the flags, they keep going up and down, but they're pretty much at half staff the last like month or two, and it is a signal of distress. And I think that's true. We are distressed as a nation, apart from politics, on top of everything else. And it is compounding, and it does cause people to crack or to have episodes.
We need more than half mast because half mast. I said you said half staff.
Mast is on a ship.
I'm sorry.
Staff if it's on land.
See, I never knew that before. Okay, half mast, but it means the same thing. Half mast, half staff, or flags.
Mast implies a ship.
If the Port Jeff ferry is docked and the flag is half,
it's a staff because it's a boat.
I thought you said mast was a boat.
Or, I mean, a mast, not a staff.
Yeah, okay. It's confusing.
You confused me. That's not fair.
I'm not trying to.
The point is, we are under distress, and I think the people who are having trouble, they tend to act out because they don't know, they don't have ways of working through this stuff rationally. So in times like this, yeah, we do see people go a little crazy, fly off the handle, and it isn't necessarily associated. It's as that's as silly as associating, like we just indicated, a robbery or something in the street that happens to all kinds of people and is itself an indiscriminate phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
You can't conflate that with protest and these other incidents. The same way that this person, one of the commenters, was talking about the right to be in the street or not, or some of the other comments in there, and crimes necessarily aren't necessarily associated with the actual movement or a discussion or systemic issues that need to actually be addressed. And you can't come up with these sort of crazy scenarios or asinine examples and somehow say, well, this is validation for this racist attitude. It doesn't work like that.
But you see, that's what people do. They tell themselves something enough times and it turns into fact. They tell themselves that there's all this racist attitudes towards them as white people, that they're victimized by the black people who get all this preferential treatment. They keep repeating that to themselves. But if you look at the facts, if you look at what is available to people, what experiences we all go through, you will see easily that white people still have a phenomenal advantage in almost every aspect. And yeah, you might find some instances where people are trying to right the scales and give more opportunity to a race that has historically been oppressed. But you will not find yourself stopped dozens of times by the cops because of the color of your skin. You won't find yourself being denied housing. You won't find yourself being looked at with fear and hatred by people as you walk down the street. All these things you take for granted, you're not even going to experience. Yet you're telling yourself that you're the victim here. And all these people keep chiming in on the Newsday board and everywhere else, and they build a movement. Then you have Donald Trump running. And before you know it, this becomes something powerful and scary. And I'm scared by all this. I really am, because it's getting huge. It's getting big. It's getting very, very ugly.
Yeah, I think it's funny also that it becomes one side of two extremes. You either have a huge backlash or this attitude of white guilt. But I don't think people who are white, I don't think they stay in that, because that's uncomfortable. They can't accept the history. They can't understand and accept necessarily what privilege is and how those invisible things don't affect them in the same way that it affects black people or other people who have darker skin color than you. They can't really stay there. And so, in fact, they end up on this other side of the extreme, which is a backlash and now a huge political movement, which, like, as you said, is very scary, because it's that snowballing of what people conflate and what validity is attached to that. And then that becoming its own force outside of any kind of rationality, where we're all trying to have nice civil discussions and awareness and all of that, they can't even hear it, right? And so that's kind of represented in these comment boards, because people are just their hackles are up, they are on the attack at any evidence of rational argument, because that undermines their backlash.
Even putting aside all the racism that we just went over in these comments, let's just focus on one issue, and that's Black Lives Matter movement and people who say that its existence is a form of racism. Let's just focus on that one statement, which is repeated over and over again until it turns into fact for so many of these people. The fact that someone has to say Black Lives Matter is in itself something that points to the racism that exists in our country against black people. Because for everybody else, you don't have to say it. Yeah, people aren't saying white lives matter. You know why? Because white lives do matter, and we all know that. Nobody's debating White Lives Matter. Nobody's debating
blue
that,
lives?
And blue lives, blue is not a race, okay? We're talking racial issues. Let's not be stupid here.
It's true.
All right? You know, say if you think for some reason that cop lives don't matter, that people are saying that, people are believing that, that's just utter nonsense. I don't know of any movement that says, or any group of people other than criminals that say cop lives don't matter. And criminals aren't really a racial group or an ethnic group or anything like that. So, yeah, of course, you know, plumbers' lives matter. You know, everybody's lives matter. But throughout history, black lives have been seen as cheap, as expendable, as, well, they deserved it. All kinds of things. You
like
know, when the two shootings took place over the last couple of weeks, before all the horrible police shootings took place, people on these same boards were 100% saying the person deserved it without knowing any facts. Because a black guy gets shot by a cop, he's asking for it. He's not obeying the commands. And he's basically just behaving in a thuggish way. All kinds of code words that they use to basically reinforce the stereotype.
Which, you know, I just stop right there. That alone, the concept of a strong black man, that being a threat, right there is problematic. That is a stereotype, and that is haunted. I mean, that has been around. Okay, we are not unfamiliar with this attitude, and I mean, I think I personally, like, I walk around, I carry myself in a certain way, and if I was a person of color and I was carrying myself in a strong way, would that be also a threatening way?
Well, yeah, you got to tone it down a bit, Kyle.
Right.
Parents tell their kids this, basically saying, don't be so black, you know?
Yep.
Don't wear the hoodie, you know, don't, they say don't talk back, which, you know, I agree with. Don't talk back to a cop, is just going to lead to unpleasantness. But if your rights are being abused, you don't take it. You don't just ask for more.
Right.
You don't grab his gun or anything stupid like that. But, hell, I've talked back to cops. I even shoved a cop once. That's a whole story. But, you know, he asked for it. But the thing, people have told me this. Cops have told me this. They said if you were black, and they used a different word for black, by the way, I would not be alive. All right. I've been told that by our finest. They're not always our finest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into personal stuff too much, but I've definitely been
good.
In situations where if I was black, I probably would have been shot. I was definitely, I had non-lethal weapons used against me, and after that, I definitely took to heart the potential for me to be basically dead if I looked a different way. If that choice to use non-lethal weapons hadn't been made, and I was the right kind of profile, I probably wouldn't be here speaking to you. There was another instance also, speaking of backlash and reverse racism, when you and I were walking around in New York, and a guy was calling us crackers.
Yeah.
And
he was insane. He was pushing a grocery cart and just yelling telephone poles.
Right.
You know, he was basically out of his
mind.
He was
saying, I'm from Westchester, you know, white man taught me how to walk these streets. He was going on and on and on. You crackers, you know, I'm not the one to mess with.
Wasn't getting to the point, so
right.
he lost my
He really, we just kept walking, and I was like, are you really talking? I was just muttering loudly at us, and then, like, you know, we stop, basically, at the crosswalk, and he crosses the street, and there's guys, like, unloading at a drugstore, and he immediately, like, he's like, no, watch your pallet, you're gonna drop something. He's, like, very helpful in being nice to them, and I realized in that moment, like, as much as I wanted to say something, because I wanted to be like, look, I'm not who you think I am, guy. Like, I mean, I respect what you're saying, but...
Really? You respected what he was saying?
Well, I respect your opinion, and, you know... No, I didn't really respect it.
In New York, you're trained to just sort of shut things out and just keep plodding ahead, not making eye contact, where all kinds of mayhem is breaking loose around you. And that's just the mode I got into.
Yeah, see, I don't have that as much, although I'm growing that. I'm getting a little bit better at that. But I heard what he was saying. I knew what he was saying. I know the lingo, okay? I know the lingo. I heard the terms, and I knew it was him directing it at us. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can take that. You can just sort of, as you said, plot ahead, and I just kept watching, sort of dumbfounded, realizing saying something wouldn't get me anywhere. And I realized what I'm trying to get to is I know who I am. And in a lot of ways, I empathize with whatever reason he's pulling that shopping cart. And at that moment when I saw him reaching out to help somebody else, I was like, this guy is normal. He's like more like me than anybody else. I would have said the same thing.
We don't know what he's been through. We don't know the kinds of abuse he's taken.
Exactly.
At the hands of people who look like us. That's why I don't need to follow up and challenge or anything like that. I don't know what people have been through, what they're going through at that very moment.
Yeah, but I realized that the way I was carrying myself, walking through that area with my shoulders back, right, my head held high, you know, very confident because, you know, I knew where I was going. I felt safe, right? That in and of itself, it appears a certain way. And I think that was the commentary. Now, I don't know if there was anything to take away from it personally, but it was this ability to present myself that way and carry myself in a certain way that itself, I think, represented privilege. That if I was black and I was carrying myself that way, somebody would have been there to cut me down to size. And he, though pulling his shopping cart, was right there telling me how he felt about who I was and how I was carrying myself. And that there's a sort of antithesis to that. And I appreciate it in hindsight, but when it was going on, I didn't appreciate it. You know, I didn't like being called that. I'm okay with being called a cracker, but I heard it deeply.
Well, you know, it would be interesting if we could flip a switch and change the color of our skin and see how things differed from day to day.
That would be cool.
Read the book called Black Like Me, where a guy actually did that. He basically dyed his skin and noted the differences between the way he was treated when he was black, when he was white. Unfortunately, I think it killed him because he died of melanoma or something. That's the story I heard. But it's an excellent book, and you learn a lot from that. Ben Carson, though, would not learn very much from that. Did you hear what he said today? Well, actually, yeah, it was today.
I just had an incoming message from... No, I can't do Carson that well.
No, but you're doing a good...
I didn't hear him.
Doing a good Trevor there, I'll say that.
Yeah, it's a good Trevor.
Okay. For thousands of years, mankind has known what a man is and what a woman is.
He said, is this about the pyramids again?
Why is this something that he feels he has to address?
Oh, this is a gender.
He's
equality.
Talking to the Florida delegation near the RNC in Cleveland today. And now all of a sudden, we don't know anymore. Now, is that the height of absurdity? Because today, you feel like a woman, even though everything about you genetically says that you're a man or vice versa. Wouldn't that be the same as if you woke up tomorrow morning after seeing a movie about Afghanistan or reading some books and said, you know what? I'm Afghanistan. I'm Afghanistan? That's not... you're Afghan.
Afghanistan.
I know I don't look that way. My ancestors came from Sweden or something. I don't know. But I really am. And if you say I'm not, then you're racist. This is, you know, this guy's a neurosurgeon, for God's sake. And he is so ignorant about these things, about gender equality, about racial equality. And it's being embraced by so many people who are confused and rejecting other people's perspectives on these things.
Yeah.
To compare somebody deciding they want to be an Afghan because they saw a movie about Afghanistan to someone whose sexual identity is something that they're trying to come to terms with. Can you imagine how somebody would feel hearing that?
You know, I can imagine, and I think I would be disillusioned with leadership and that attitude being something that prevails and that represents people. I mean, that unfortunately is what we're seeing, though. That's being unearthed in this archaeological political dig, this archaeological find we have. That is the 2016 election cycle. But what's patently wrong, what's straight up wrong with that, is that he's saying for thousands of years we've had it right. And I think that's arrogant.
Yeah, because thousands of years we have had a lot of things wrong.
There is so much that has been wrong. And I think just the Biden trying to get something, trying to be right about it, I think we need to be more open to the variety of gender out there. I think that's the point that's being missed. and that we've cataloged people in far too few categories. And that in of itself is problematic and alienates.
Yeah, and just because you've had your eyes closed, that's not a joke about Ben Carson, who always seems to have his eyes closed. But just because you've had your eyes closed to all these things that have been around you doesn't mean they're not there. Doesn't mean they haven't been there all the time. We're just finally treating them in a somewhat mature and fair way, or starting to, being met with all this resistance. But as you can see, also a lot of ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah. Some stupidity. But you see how it threatens. It threatens their concept, the social constructions that say men should be this, women should be that. And dare I say, a Republican should be this. whatever. I don't know. I mean, that's the exact problem. That is what is problematic, and that is actually ironically going on with their party identity, that they are trying to fit all these candidates into a very narrow definition, and it's simply not working. And I don't think you can do that with people's sexual identity either.
You know, do yourself a favor, and after we're done, turn on C-SPAN and watch what's going on with the Republican convention. I watched the whole thing yesterday, the whole thing. You know, and there are people who say, I can't look at those people. You have to look at those people. You have to see what they're doing. You have to see what they're saying. It was so disturbing, just the things that they latched onto, and the way that they talk about the people who are different from them, whether they're foreigners, whether they're Democrats, whether they're people who
soldiers.
It's you know, people from a different country that are fighting on a different side or whatever. I watched every speaker yesterday. The things Giuliani was saying was just it scared me. It was like watching a Mussolini speech. All the just the passion and screaming about police and law abiding citizens and whoa. And then you had the military guys who were trying to make jokes that really didn't land even in that crowd. And just basically
talking about how brainwashed they were and how they dedicated their whole lives to something bigger than themselves.
But they still found time to hate Hillary Clinton's guts. And, you know, this whole Benghazi thing kept coming up again.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like they portray her as somebody who is cackling and plotting to kill U.S. servicemen and taking the side of Libyan anarchists or whatever. It's amazing because they talk about Libya is now in chaos, and Hillary Clinton supported overthrowing Muammar Gaddafi. Who didn't support overthrowing Muammar Gaddafi? And she's responsible for the state that country is in right now, without saying a word about what George W. Bush did with Iraq that started this whole thing. There would be no ISIS. All these attacks. You know, the people, every time there is an ISIS attack someplace, George W. Bush is responsible. He is, not directly, but certainly very indirectly. His actions, the lies that were told to the American people, it resulted in this. You basically stirred up a hornet's nest that's going to take a long time to settle down. But, okay, so I was watching all of these different talks, and they were just disturbing but enlightening at the same time. And I think there's certainly going to be more of that. Some of the Trump kids are talking tonight. Oh, yeah, of course. His wife gave the speech last night.
Yes, Melania.
Melania. Let's not be nasty. Look, everyone's saying, you know, they have nothing against her. She seems like a nice woman. But boy, I mean, first of all, okay, she did lie. She said that she wrote the speech. If she did write the speech, then she stole the speech from none other than Michelle Obama, which, you know, plagiarism is bad enough. All right, it is. If you sit down and you write a speech, if you go out and look for somebody else that gave a speech like that, I don't see, you know, how that's a good move. It just seems like that's going to end badly. You're not going to be saying your own words. You're going to be saying the words of somebody else. But to take it from your bitter rival, that person, of all the people in the world, you know, anybody else probably would have been a better choice from a PR point of view than Michelle Obama, you know?
because they're so such opposites as far as where they're coming from.
I don't think they're opposites. I think they get along, but certainly the political camps are.
It's funny how the rhetoric works, though, regardless like of what side.
Well, and you want to talk about rhetoric, though, about spinning. You know, I thought maybe this would be the one thing that the Trump campaign could say, yeah, okay, you got us. We screwed up on this one. I don't know how they expected to get away with that or whoever, you know, whoever actually did this. But instead, they're denying that there is any plagiarism whatsoever. Maybe there's no cribbing of Michelle Obama's speech. These were common words and values. She cares about her family. To think she'd be cribbing Michelle Obama's words is crazy. Well, yeah, I agree. It is crazy, but they're common words, and they're words that make up sentences, but to put the words in the same order and to say them in a particular way, that is something that is not as common.
Yeah, the whole structure of it, the chronology of the speech and the timeline, the way it unfolds is pretty unmistakable.
Yeah, you know, you think certain things have been said a lot. But they really haven't. I can prove it, too. If you go to Google, I'm going to go to Google right now. And, Kyle, you're going to tell me a sentence that you think nobody else, that you think is common, a common sentence. And I'm going to tell you how many people have actually said this in the past. So, you know, not a three-word sentence, but just something that you think is fairly common.
I'm baffled. I don't know. I was going to mention something else, and this is now. Let's see.
It's okay. I'm waiting for Google to load. Apparently, that's too much for the university internet to do. We can't get Google to load on the damn webpage.
Sure.
We'll go back to your original.
Well, my point. I just wanted to say that the overarching thing. I think that this whole speech plagiarizing kerfuffle state really says is that Melania doesn't really have much to say.
Well,
I don't. I mean, come on. You have this great opportunity to speak to people, and I mean, he's so off the cuff, and you know, derides the use of teleprompters. Here she comes, teleprompters, canned speech. I mean, how plastic and fake is that? It struck me as a really, really shallow window dressing. And it was funny because Trump kind of walked on, guided her on, and then like picked her up and walked her off stage, and then he disappeared. And all that was missing was like the crown and the whole, you know, beauty pageant thing. Really just lame. Just stupid to watch. And I wish she would have. Oh, and she Rickrolled everybody. And I heard that right when she said it. She said, he's never going to give up, never going to let you down.
Did she know she was, maybe she was cribbing that one too?
Ever put that in what she said, knew what they were doing. And I checked it a couple hours later, and definitely other people picked up on the Rick.
Can I just say, Chrome is the worst browser in the world because it doesn't load pages half the time. I just launched Firefox and it works just fine. But, you know, my Chrome was scolding me yesterday saying, you can't benefit from Chrome anymore. You have to reinstall it because you haven't updated it. You know, as usual, passive aggressive Google stuff. But the thing is, they won't let me upgrade it because my computer's too old. So I have to get a new computer to get a new Chrome, and I'm not doing that.
Anyway, she could have had an authentic moment of speaking from the heart with her accent and, you know, not speaking perfect English. And like she said, I am citizens now, I think, when she was talking about getting a green card. Some of that stuff can be endearing.
It could be.
If it's from the heart. And I think just the fact that it was so staged and so fake does not lend to her character or her role as strong. It shows how messy and horribly unorganized I feel that his campaign is as far as preparedness and seeing that as an opportunity and really using it. Anyway, my sentence.
Yes, because we have Firefox going now. So
is community radio is the best darn thing.
Okay, right away I can tell you that's going to be only you in the world saying that.
Oh, wait, I thought that was the point.
You want to say something that sounds, yeah, I know we've done it before. Say something that sounds like a common sentence, and I'm going to show how many people have actually said it. You know, a fairly common sentence.
This is the most average thing to say.
Okay, I'm going to type that. This hang on, I can barely see what I'm writing here. This is the most, what is it again, average?
Thing. You can say.
You can say.
That's verbatim.
Did I type it right?
Yeah, that looks good.
Okay, and I'm going to hit return. Nobody has said that, Kyle. The first person in the world, according to Google, to say that phrase.
Wow.
So there you go.
Well, I feel that I'm at least a little above average for having gotten that far.
And you're probably the first person to say that, too. Hey, we're out of time, and we're going to hope. Hopefully, you're going to hope, too. I hope we don't have to keep talking about hope like this, because I really am starting to dislike the word.
You know, this time, next week,
hope will be over. Because the RNC will be over and we'll be giving up.
We won't be planting hope.
Uh-huh.
We'll be doing all kinds of other things.
But the DNC will be happening. And yeah, hopefully we'll have survived and we'll
be
down
with DNC.
We'll see. All those things to say about them. OTW@2600.com is our email address. Finn coming up next. And get all the words to this song too.
Bumble bumbling, the Stingers, Martha Hooper, Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mack, and Twang, and Eddie Hisman, Ring, we're going steady, take it easy, take me high, lie, house of fire, no commotion, poker, passion, deeper purple, satisfaction, baby, got it, give me, getting hotter, Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Richie Valens, end of story, my Vista Fuji, I'm a Kamasutra, Rama Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre Barry, Righteous Archers, Nielsen, Harry, shimmy, Coco Poppin', Fats back, and finger poppin'.
Life is a rock.
Carly Simon, Levy Holder, Rolling Stone, and Folder, Johnny Cash and Johnny Rivers, Cancel Now, I got the Shivers, Mungo, Jerry, Peter, Paul, and Paula, Mary, Dr. John, the Nightly Tripper, Doris Day, and Jack the Ripper, Gotta Go, So Gotta Sweat, Lee and Russell, Give Me Shelter, Miracles, and Smokey Places, Slide Guitars, the Fender Bass, and Mushroom, Mumbling, Bonnie Bramley, Wilson, Pickett, Stop, and Kick It.
Life is a rock, but the radio.
Jay and Dale and Ronnie, Kukla, Fran and Norman, Oakley, Denver, John and Osmond, Donnie, JJ, Caleb, ZZ, Top and LLB, and Dee Dee Dana, David Bowie, Steely Dan, and Sing Me Proud of CC Ryder, Edgar Winter, Jonah Summers, Isaac Martin, Johnny Thunder, Eric Clapton, Pedal Wallace, Stephen Foster, Doo Da Doo Da, Cool Vibrations, Helby Ronda, Surfing Girl, Little Honda, Tida Tida, Honey, Sugar, Yummy, CBS and Warner Brothers, RCA and all the others.
Life is a rock, but the radio rolling, gotta turn it.
My friends, this is Finn, and this is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook every Tuesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Tonight, we're going to be talking with Mr. Alan Inkles, the director of the Stony Brook Film Festival. We're going to give away a bunch of passes to the festival, so stay tuned for this interview. Stay tuned, baby. Catch some movies. So, you know, Alan Inkles from the Stony Brook Film Festival is going to be on in just a few moments, and he's going to give away some passes for the entire festival. And that's going to be very exciting. So if you're interested in all these great films at StonyBrookFilmFestival.com, you can check it out, which starts this Thursday night. You can get a pass for everything if you stay tuned for the interview when Alan gives out the passes. Meanwhile, we're going to hear one song before we start the interview with Alan, and another Alan, this one not quite as alive and vibrant as Alan Inkles of the Stony Brook Film Festival in the Stoller Center, passed this last week, and that would be Alan Vega, and he was in a band called Suicide, the opposite, of course, of Live and Kicking, but yeah, and he was always one of my favorites, and we're going to hear one song from him right now and some more later. But this is a nod to Alan Vega of Suicide and Mr. Alan Inkles, who's got nothing to do with Suicide and very much alive and kicking and loves to show movies to you right here on the Stony Brook campus in the Stoller Center. We'll be on just after this. Anyway, this is called Ghost Rider, going out to Mr. Alan Vega right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Hey, baby, 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 he's a looking so cute. Sneaking round, round, round in a blue jumpsuit. Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. He's a-blazing away. Like the stars, stars, stars in the universe. Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Baby, 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 he's a-screaming the truth. America, America is killing its youth. Beep, 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 he's screaming away. America, America is killing its youth. America, America is killing its youth. Ghost Rider.
Joker's ride.
Yeah, Suicide is the name of that band, and Alan Vega, the singer-songwriter, involved in that band, the core writer, and yeah, and that was from their first record, which completely freaked me out when it came out all of those years ago. But Alan just passed at the age of 78, which I couldn't even realize. I couldn't believe he was 78. But yeah, Alan Vega, a great force in post-punk music, specifically synth music, all these different things. Anyway, we're going to now be talking with Mr. Alan Inkles, the director of the Stala Center, but more importantly tonight, the director, organizer, and maverick behind the Stony Brook Film Festival. And this is their 21st year. And I've been interviewing them for many years now, and Alan's a friend of mine, and it's always a pleasure to stop into the Stony Brook Film Festival and catch the movies there. It starts this Thursday night. It runs from July 21st through July 30th, which is the next Saturday night. And it's amazing. And we're going to talk about the films. We're going to talk about all the things that happen at the Stony Brook Film Festival. We're going to talk a little about the history. And at the end of this, you will have a chance to win a pair of passes to the entire thing, plus a pair of tickets to opening night, plus, I think, a pair of tickets to see Monday night? Oh, no, Saturday night's Blind Boys of Alabama. And so you want to stay tuned for all of that. We're going to give away a whole bunch of tickets. This is a record-breaking number of tickets and passes we're giving away tonight. And Alan is just great. So without further ado, as they say in France, Alan Inkles and I pre-recorded this interview the other day and yesterday. And because he's got so much stuff to do. Getting ready for Thursday. And yeah, let's hear from Alan. We'll listen about the Stony Brook Film Festival right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Alan. Well, here we go now. Alan, welcome back to Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook. Great to have you on board again.
Great to be here. It wouldn't be the film festival if it wasn't on your show. We talk about that every year.
That's right, and that's how it is, and it's, it can't happen without us. So this year, what number festival are we up to?
This is 21, Blackjack, 21, 21st year. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it.
I can't either.
I'm sure you can't. Just very briefly, I know we really haven't talked about this in a few years, because you're on every year, and we talk about the films coming up and all this, but let's talk a little about the history. How did this get started?
Well, you know, before we had the film festival, I'm here 34 years, if you can believe it. I started when I was 12, you know. That's
with the Stala Center.
Yeah, of course, with the Stala Center. And when I first started here early on, I produced an international theater festival, which was a wonderful thing back in the early 80s. I brought companies in from all over the world. We brought theater troupes in. Then it got to be very complicated. Immigration was impossible. Obviously, it hasn't changed in 30 years, so 25 years. It was hard to get visas for companies. Actors' equity was making it difficult, and money was drying up. Corporate sponsorship was something that was beginning to dry up in Europe, you know, or state monies. So after an 11-year run of a great international theater festival bringing companies here, I ended it. And I said, well,